U.S. Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin joins us now. Even as midterm elections bring a renewed focus to domestic issues like the economy and healthcare, conflicts and crises around the globe and at our border are dominating the headlines.
Senator Johnson is a member of both the Senate Foreign Relations and Homeland Security Committees, and his recent comments on the immigration debate have attracted national attention.
Senator Johnson, welcome back to Central Time.
Hello, Cynthia. Hello, Rob. How are you doing?
Really good. How are you today?
Real good.
Well, as we mentioned, your comments have been in the news lately on immigration. Just 11 days left, working days until the August recess in Congress, trying to deal with this, what's being called a crisis of Central American youth on our border. Now, you've criticized the amount of money the president is asking for. You say a lot cheaper to send kids back home by plane. How would this repatriation fast approach deal with the immigration debate?
Well, first, let me say, I think we all agree what we are dealing with here is a humanitarian crisis, and we're a compassionate society, and we should and we will deal with those 57,000 unaccompanied children on the border with real compassion. But we also need to be concerned about and show compassion to the children currently in Central America whose parents just might be deciding right now, or somebody that they know might be deciding to pay $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 to some of the most evil people in the world, these human traffickers, these drug runners and smugglers, making that decision to pay that money to put their children on that train called the Beast, or subject them to that journey where, you know, so many are being sexually assaulted, potentially murdered. And so, you know, from my standpoint, we really have to properly diagnose the problem and establish what our primary goal should be here, and our goal should be to stop the flow. Secretary Johnson of the Department of Homeland Security testified that we're at 57,000 now. He testified that we could be to 90,000 just by the end of this fiscal year, which means September 30th, a couple months from now. And we've seen other estimates that by 2015 that number could exceed 100,000. So we need to stop the flow. We don't want to increase those numbers. And one of the things driving this illegal immigration for years is America has provided incentives for illegal crossing. And so we had a 2008 well-intentioned bill on human trafficking that Dianne Feinstein put in an amendment that really gave all kinds of additional rights to children in Central America, basically slowed down the process of returning them to their country of origin. And then we had President Obama, of course, issue his memorandum. I don't think he had the constitutional authority to do so, but, you know, deferred action on childhood admissions, which basically communicated to people in Central America, boy, send your kids up to America. If they get to the promised land, they're home free. And so, you know, my objection to the $3.7 billion, or put another way, $3,700 million, is we're just creating added incentive. And if we spend that money, disperse kids around America, we're just, again, affirming the fact that if you come into America illegally, you're going to be able to stay here, and we need to, you know, eliminate or at least drastically reduce those incentives for illegal crossing.
The president is also looking to spend money in the countries of origin here, among other things, to try to send the message that kids will not necessarily be taken into the country, to try to help with the economy, to try to help with violence and gangs in those countries. Is that a good strategy?
Well, he's allocating about $295 billion out of that $3.7 billion for that purpose. But I guess I would ask, you know, we haven't done a particularly good job of shoring up our own economy, providing economic security to America, or ending drug violence here in America. So what makes us think that we spend $295 million, and we can stem violence and improve economies in Central America? I think that's just a pipe dream. If you want to deter parents from sending their kids, the best deterrence really would be to have planes of kids, again, done very safely with great humanity, return those children so that the parents or anybody thinking about spending $5,000 will just realize that's just going to be a waste of money, because if you get into our country illegally, you're going to be sent right back. So don't spend the money. Don't endanger your children. That has got to be the number one deterrence. We had a hearing in Homeland Security, and, you know, I think it was the Justice Department, or might have been Border Patrol. One of the agencies had these nice posters, you know, showing a barren desert, and, you know, a marketing campaign to try and deter people. And, you know, we should do, you know, certainly broadcast the reality situation. But the reality situation should be that you're not going to be able to stay in America. And right now, the reality situation is they're being allowed to stay in America. So we've got to end that dynamic. We've got to end those incentives.
One objection to that is that some of these youth, who knows what percentage, might genuinely qualify as refugees due to risk of violence, human rights abuses, being forced into gangs or prostitution. They might really qualify as refugees. And if we send them back without going through the process, we don't know.
Sure. Well, you know, there's a way to legally claim asylum, and it generally starts in your country of origin. You go to the U.S. Embassy, the U.S. Consulate, and you tell your story and you try and gain access that way. Listen, there are 7 billion people in the world. There are hundreds of millions that living in real destitution, and I think we're a compassionate society. We want every human being to have the opportunity to build a good life for themselves or family, but the fact of the matter is we have to control our borders. We're a nation of laws. We have to have people respect that, and we certainly have to control the flow of legal immigration. So we should really fix our legal immigration system. We should have a robust guest worker program so people can come into the appropriate number of people can come into our country legally a lot easier than we make it now. But we cannot tolerate illegal immigration. We certainly can't have borders that are utterly out of control, not only from a standpoint of the humanitarian crisis it's creating, but also from a standpoint of national security. You know, we don't know what terrorists may be coming in because we haven't secured the border, as well as the health aspects. You know, we are getting drug-resistant strains of tuberculosis being carried in the country. So there are all kinds of dangerous aspects to this. But, you know, a top priority of the federal government is national defense and securing and protecting the borders of your country. And we're one of the few nations that simply don't do that, and we have to start.
Talking to U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, if you want to join in and ask a question and give your thoughts on immigration and the current border crisis, or we'll be moving on to foreign policy in a little bit, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Reed is already on the line in Clintonville. We'll bring him on the air now. Reed, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity. Senator Johnson, I have two questions for you. The first is, what happens to these children once the planes land back in Guatemala or Colombia or wherever they might be returned to, when their parents or relatives of any relationship do not come to the airport to meet them? How do we deal with that sort of issue? And I'm sure that would be a major aspect of loading planes with hundreds of children at a time. Secondly, I would ask you why you singled out Dianne Feinstein and President Obama in your previous comment without making any reference whatsoever to President George Bush, who had a great deal to do with the immigration policy when he was in office.
And Reed, thanks for the call. Senator Johnson?
Well, first of all, when I talk about dealing with those children with real humanity and compassion, I think if we're going to spend money, we should spend it on facilities down in those home countries, potentially contributing to their immigration services so that, again, there's an opportunity if there are real hardship cases there and there's a legitimate claim for asylum, we should do that. But, you know, a legitimate claim for asylum isn't just because you don't have a high standard of living or not as high as in the U.S. because, again, there are literally billions of people throughout the world that don't, and we simply can't have completely open borders. The reason I mentioned Dianne Feinstein, it was her amendment that really created, you know, all of the legal protections, which, again, I'm not opposed to legal protections, but we have to understand it was those legal protections that really did pretty well tie government's hands in terms of actually returning Central American children to their home country. So they're all staying, which, again, creates that incentive for more people to come. And you just have to do a root cause analysis here. If we want to stop the flow, and, again, I would say that has got to be our goal of policy. We don't want to see another 50,000, another 100,000 of these unaccompanied children being sent here. But as long as we incentivize it, that's what's going to happen.
Thanks to Reed for the call. Before I go back to caller, Senator Johnson, this issue is coming home to Wisconsin very literally. Requests evidently from the federal government to look for sites to at least temporarily house some of these youth on the border in Madison and Milwaukee. Your response to that?
Well, we are hearing news reports of that. We have not in our office heard from this administration they have any plans to do that. we're monitoring that closely. But again, I think that just speaks to the entire issue. If we disperse these children, if we move them away from the border, or if we don't send them back, if we disperse them around America, I mean, that's pretty much a tacit admission that we're not going to send them home. I mean, that's what they're being told. They get this notice to appear, but they're viewing that as a permission slip to stay. And that's really what the drug cartels are telling those children, those parents back in Guatemala and Central America. So if we disperse them around America, the fact is they're not being sent back. They won't be sent back. So the reality situation is exactly what the drug cartel is telling those kids, which, again, incentivizes more to come. Our goal needs to be to stop the flow.
Back to our callers now with Chris on the line in Madison. Chris, hi.
Hi, nice to meet you.
What did you want to bring up, Chris?
I'm looking at a similar situation that would have happened about 50, 60 years ago right now. And we were taking in immigrants that were sometimes coming over illegally during the Holocaust. And this was very obviously a humanitarian crisis that was being faced with genocide. They obviously didn't have the Jewish people being forced into prostitution or drug cartels that are happening in Central and South America. But it's a very similar thing that we would have been. Our future generations and other societies across the globe will judge us based on the decisions that we make right now. We have to make the morally responsible one to provide relief to children who are sometimes young enough that they would not be considered unaccompanied minors within the United States flights. If a parent is sending their 4-year-old, 5-year-old child into the United States unaccompanied, that's not a decision that's been made lightly. It's a decision that's been made as a last resort.
Chris, thanks for the call. Senator Johnson, a moral obligation to help these kids more than just sending them back to their families, she says.
Again, America's a very compassionate society. We're a nation of immigrants. We need to value that fact. We need a functioning legal immigration system. And there is a way, you know, what should have happened 56 years ago, what should be happening now is individuals should be seeking a legal path to America. I mean, do it the right way, not do it illegally. We just can't abide by this lawlessness. We can't. Again, you're seeing the crisis that's being put in the border by 57,000. If we open up the floodgates, we'd be talking about hundreds of thousands, if not millions more. And so I keep going back to the overall goal is we have to secure our border. But the way you secure the border, we may have to put more resources there. We may have to build better fencing. I've been down there. The fencing really is pretty minimal. Some place it doesn't exist, maybe more agents. But in general, the way you secure the border is you eliminate all the incentives for illegal immigration, which, let me add another one. In the Senate immigration bill, one of the reasons I voted against that, it included $262 billion of basically benefits for non-U.S. citizens. We've made all these promises to U.S. citizens that we don't have the capability of paying for over the next 30 years. We can't afford to offer benefits to non-U.S. citizens. Again, that's just another one of those incentives. So, you know, I agree with Chris. This has been a bipartisan problem over administrations, both Democratic and Republican. We have refused. We've been unable to secure the border, which is one of the reasons Americans aren't trusting of a comprehensive approach that includes border security, because they've been promised that in the past. America has never secured the border, and so they don't have any faith that they will do it this time. So from my standpoint, we need to first secure the border. But again, let me point out, it's about eliminating the incentives for illegal immigration. That is the number one thing we do, which means you need a functioning legal immigration system, a guest worker program. Let's not send the brightest people we educate here in America back to their home countries where they develop businesses and innovate in those countries. Let's let them innovate and make American economy stronger. So there are a lot of things that I think we can agree on. And we should concentrate on what we can agree on. Hopefully we'll agree on the overall goal is we need to stop the influx.
We're speaking with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson covering the immigration so far. We're going to turn to foreign affairs, the Middle East and elsewhere coming up.
What questions do you have for Senator Johnson? You can let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're back with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, and we're talking about ongoing crises and conflicts around the world and at our border.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Your thoughts on U.S. foreign policy, especially in the Middle East, 800-642-1234. One, two, three, four. Senator Johnson, the big news today or this week, Israel, Gaza, rockets launched from Gaza into Israel, bombs from Israel into the Gaza Strip. The latest we're hearing is that Israel has again agreed to a short ceasefire, waiting for a response from Hamas. Looking at this from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, what would you like to see the United States do here, if anything?
Well, what I'd like to see is Hamas to do is stop rocketing, sending rockets into Israel, and recognize Israel's right to exist. I mean, that has been the big stumbling block. I think Israel has shown repeatedly that they want peace, and they're willing to really go to great lengths and negotiate an awful lot of way to obtain peace. They just don't have a willing negotiating partner. So I've always been concerned when America forces or puts an undue amount of pressure on Israel to enter into peace agreements with a partner like Hamas, and quite honestly, the Palestinian Authority that has just never recognized Israel's right to exist. I don't know how you get over that table stake concession on your negotiating partner in the peace process where the other side just refuses the fact that refuses that you even have the right to exist. So again, from my standpoint, peace in the Middle East really can be achieved immediately by just Hamas laying down its arms. You know, stop rocketing Israel. Take a look at what Israel has done in terms of growth of the economy and providing prosperity for its people. I wish the other Arab lands, the other dictatorships in that region would just look and say, you know, we could actually have strong economies and have opportunities for our people to have build a good life for themselves or family if we follow the example of an Israel rather than try and wipe them off the face of the earth.
A sticking point from the Palestinian side has been objections to Israeli settlements. Palestinians say they've been violating previous international agreements on that issue. Should that be on the table?
I think Israel's always put just about everything on the table. But again, I don't know how you can negotiate anything with somebody who doesn't recognize your right to exist. So until that happens, I just think, unfortunately, peace between Israel and the Palestinians is a pipe dream.
We'll go to a caller now. We've got Mark on the line in La Crosse. Mark, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, Senator, are you as frustrated as I am with the coverage of all these issues that we have in the Middle East and even with Russia, that they don't go back and look at candidate Obama and look at the policies that he put in place when he backed off doing the missile defense in Eastern Europe, when he put all these policies in place that have just backfired on us completely as far as when we pulled out of Iraq, how we did it, how we approach it, how we approached all these other Middle Eastern countries where we sat back and weren't proactive. And they just don't go back and analyze all the things that have been done and the cause and the reaction of his policy and procedure that puts us in a situation that's far worse than if we would have taken the approach that the other candidates were touting that were going against them. What's your feeling on that?
Well, I always say that nobody can out-frustrate me. This is an incredibly frustrating place to be. You know, let me first start in terms of whose fault it is for these conflicts. I mean, it's Vladimir Putin's, it's Bashar Assad, it's Al-Qaeda. It's those are the people who are responsible for all this conflict. But that being said, the fact is America is the world superpower. If we refuse to lead, greater vacuums, greater voids get created in the world, and very bad people fill those voids, and there are things we can do. We can provide stability. President Obama's, and I think his greatest historic blunder, strategic blunder, was in bugging out of Iraq. He came into that situation, into the presidency, with Iraq largely stable. His job was to improve stability, maintain it or improve it, and the only way that was going to happen is if we did what we did in Europe and in Germany and Japan and South Korea. We left a stabilizing force. I don't think we'd be facing what appears to be the breakup of Iraq, the establishment of what the Wall Street Journal calls Al-Qaeda-stan in Syria and Iraq. So you know, there are things that America can do, things we can't do. But in the end, I really do blame the evildoers, people like Assad and Putin and Osama bin Laden. Those are the real people to blame.
But how long do you leave forces in a place like Iraq to maintain stability? I mean, would you say we should have had a force there for decades to come?
Well, you know, possibly, but then you say, okay, well, that's going to cost a lot of money. Well, what does it cost us when we see this level of instability, when we see the world going up in flames in so many different places? You know, we buried our head in the sand when Al-Qaeda declared war on us in the 90s, and as a result, the Twin Towers came down. So we simply can't ignore these problems, or they will continue to fester and they will eventually come home to our shores. You know, the spread of Al-Qaeda, the metastasizing of it, is a real threat to our national security. We ignore it at our own peril. We ignored it in the 90s. We got 9/11. And if we continue to ignore it, I think the cost is going to be far greater than if we would have just maintained a stabilizing force in Iraq, which could have done so much good. We would have prevented overflights of Iran supplying Syria. Who knows? You know, how much stability we could have provided had we stayed there, but we didn't. And that was just, a huge strategic blunder, and we're paying the cost for that blunder.
One more foreign policy issue I want to get to before we're done. Some new news from Benghazi this week. One of the suspects in the 2012 terrorist attack turned up dead. A month ago, U.S. forces captured a man viewed as a ringleader of the attack. Republicans in the House still investigating the events surrounding the attack. What are you still hoping comes out of that?
Well, I hope we do bring the people to justice. It is, from my standpoint, pretty sad that it's taken so long. We've known who these people are. I think we probably have the wherewithal to do it, but we haven't. But again, I don't know all the specifics, so we need to bring people to justice. We also need to hold people accountable for a tragedy that I don't think ever should have happened. I think just a small, fully armed security force in Benghazi, and that really was the dereliction duty of Secretary Clinton. Secretary of State Clinton, this tragedy, four Americans didn't have to die, and those people need to be held accountable as well.
Senator Johnson, thank you as always for joining us.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. By the way, tomorrow we'll be talking to U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin from here in Wisconsin, not on foreign policy, on some health care issues, including what's going on here in the state.
Coming up next, a Wisconsin teenager and her mom are headed to the White House this week to meet with the First Lady. She was the Wisconsin winner in a national kids recipe contest.